So first of all, it's a pleasure for me to be back with you this morning. I don't know if some of you might remember, but the last time that Daryl Berger and I did such a pulpit exchange was almost exactly 3 years ago. It was Palm Sunday 3 years ago, and I believe the date was the 28th of March that time. Pardon? And the reason that I remembered that is because 3 years ago when I came in and it was Palm Sunday, the congregation that uses your facilities before you're using them had burnt up the year before's palms, and this room was so filled with smoke that we had to open the windows just to be able to breathe. And this morning it smells rather lovely in here, I think. So I'm pleased to be back. Pardon?
Your Easter's out of sync with us this year, so...
Well, you'll just have to look forward to that. So I'm pleased to be back and pleased to say how much I appreciate my growing collegial relationship with Daryl and the developing association we have between our two congregations. Daryl may not have mentioned to you that he and I are both preaching on the same theme this morning. I'm a stranger here myself. I'm sure that both congregations will hear a very different sermon. I don't know how... Do you publish your sermons? What we will do in Montclair is we'll publish both of these sermons for today. And if you want to do that, I'll be happy to get your text. Pardon? Okay.
We will have it, though, you know.
Great. What you may not know about me is that I'm a sucker for the narrative. I love stories, either to tell them or to hear them. And so I come this morning with a couple of stories for you. And I'll begin with a story that's actually one of the short chapters from my book that I wrote about a bicycle ride that I took across the country a couple of years ago with a member of your congregation, Bill Slazak. And I believe that Bill and Ricky are going to be back later this week in time to be here for your Seder. They'll be returning from their visit with Cecilia and her parents in New Zealand. And I imagine that's much how the visit went, that it was them visiting with Cecilia and her parents. But on to our first story. So this directly from the book. We began our 16th day in Springer, New Mexico, setting out early because the weather was supposed to start out ugly and then get even worse as the day wore on. We rode out along Maxwell Avenue, heading up toward the highway on the edge of town. Even at the beginning, we rode through a pea soup fog punctuated only by driving rain. As we rode past the electronic marquee in front of the Farmers and Cattlemen's International Bank, it said that it was 42 degrees at 6:30 a.m. Oh my God, I muttered a quiet prayer to myself. The weather forecast did not let us down. Things got, well, they did not get any better. The challenges were many. It was cold and rainy. I was soaked to the bone and freezing. My eyeglasses were dripping wet inside and out. They got all fogged up so that I had to take them off, which is not a particularly excellent thing for me to do. And to top it off, there was a strong headwind that put my progress into a very slow motion. You might have had dreams like that, I have. We three riders were all fairly miserable, and so each of us kind of went at our own fastest pace trying to get somewhere, anywhere, so we could get out of the weather. Towns are infrequent in northern New Mexico. 35 miles up the road, what seemed to take an eternity, we arrived one by one at the almost non-existent town of Gladstone, New Mexico. I got there about an hour and a half after Bill and about a half an hour after Chris Wells, who was our third rider. I really can't exaggerate about how much slower I was in comparison to them. A lot. They were already well on their way to being warm and dry when I walked into the Gladstone Mercantile Exchange, which was run by a kindly woman whose name was Thelma. When Bob Dylan wrote the song, "Come in," she said, "and I'll give you shelter from the storm," I think he must have had Thelma at the Gladstone Mercantile Exchange in mind. She had plenty of hot coffee in a pot on the wood stove, and we were welcome to it. She did not mind that we were walking around in our soggy, stocking feet, leaving wet footprints everywhere. She didn't even mind that we had strewn our wet clothes all over her store so that they might dry, especially across the pipes that led out from that wood stove. She exuded a do whatever you need to do and don't worry about it attitude, and so we did. I was sore and wet and cold and grouchy and hungry. After a few minutes, I walked over to where Thelma was hanging out and asked if I could get a couple of eggs over easy with some whole wheat toast. Sure, she said, but you should know that even though we call it whole wheat here, it really isn't. Is that okay? I nodded. You want some jelly with that? Do you have strawberry? I asked. No, she said, but I do have some really good homemade choke cherry jelly that I think you might like. Yeah, I said, that sounds great. My meal was perfectly fine, and it certainly hit the spot. A little later, when we'd finally thawed out and dried up as much as we were going to, and it was time to start writing again, I asked Thelma what I owed her for my breakfast. Well, she said, we don't really serve breakfast here. We don't really serve food here. But I could see that you needed it. Do you think that $2.50 would be okay? We were warmed not only by the wood stove at Thelma's Gladstone Mercantile Exchange, but also by the warmth of her gracious hospitality and her generous care. I don't know how many times we said thank you. It was quite a few. So I'll finish that chapter in a little bit, but for now, though, we'll let it stand as it is. The thing is, there I was, a stranger, and there Thelma was, minister to a bunch of soggy, middle-aged, vagabond travelers who were just passing through. Story number two. I also want to tell you about an experience I had many, many years earlier, an experience that helped me to shape my own ministry from its very beginning. I was a seminary student at the time out in the Midwest. Our Prairie Star District, are you familiar with Prairie Star District? Okay. Our Prairie Star District's minister's chapter was holding its annual spring retreat. It was to be my first as a student. At each of these retreats, as in many chapters, including our own Metro New York UU Ministers Association, we have the very rich tradition where one of the more seasoned colleagues takes an entire evening to share the story of their life odyssey with the other ministers of the chapter. It's an exquisite experience to sit in on. It's just rich. But the woman who'd been selected that year, her name was Carolyn, was someone that I admired greatly. She was bright and well articulated. She was spiritually grounded. She was, to me, a central character in the life of our chapter. She was a leader, a force to be reckoned with, and she was someone whose gifts were very easily appreciated. They were so apparent. She was everything that I hoped I might one day be as a minister. I eagerly awaited that session so that I could hear the sharing of her journey. I wanted to know how she got to be that way. I was sure it would be an amazing tale. The appointed day and hour arrived. We gathered in a large room, circled our chairs around in a big circle, and Carolyn walked into the center of that circle and announced, "I have to apologize. I can't present my odyssey to you. I have to make a confession. I feel so disconnected. I feel so alien to so many of you here. I feel so inferior, so much like an outsider, that I can't even bring my story inside of this circle. So if it's okay with all of you, I would rather spend the next couple of hours just talking with you and not to you about the state of our relationship." I was stunned. So was every other minister in that circle. Nothing like that had ever happened. I'm not sure I even breathed for a minute or two. How could this be? How could this seasoned, older, wiser, and so accomplished of a colleague feel that she was inadequate in any circle of peers? Daddy. I think that was the first moment that I began to really understand my own call to ministry. What I realized is that a universal part of the human experience is the feeling of being separated, the feeling of being other than, less than, the feeling of disconnection. Feeling like a stranger in a strange land wasn't something that just I or a few people that I knew experienced. It was everybody, even those, maybe especially those, who seemed to have so much going for them. I'm a stranger here myself is a feeling that's well known to all of us. I realized in that experience that the religious community was the place where one could turn to transform and transcend that experience of separation, that experience of brokenness. I realized that the religious community is where we can aspire to be more than our individual selves. Here we can aspire to be in communion with others, lifting the threshold of the human experience by holding one another in the transforming power of love. I realized that the formative experience, that I'd been called to recognize and articulate a vision of that greater love, and then to do whatever I could to move toward that vision myself, and then to invite others to be a part of that vision as well. However separate or broken their lives might be, however successful or joy-filled their lives might be. The truth is, the world, our world, really is filled with all kinds of brokenness. We don't have to look far at any given moment to see that. If there were no such things as existential or spiritual crises, if there were no such thing as evil, there would be no need of religious community, no need of ministers, lay or ordained. But there is need. And that's because even as you are, I am a stranger here myself. We all are. And because there is brokenness and separation, just as Thelma at the Mercantile Exchange was, each of us is called to a ministry of being with and for one another, holding one another, and serving one another in order to ease the pain and the suffering that is a part of each human life. A gift that comes with being part of a beloved religious community such as this, such as Unitarian Universalism, a gift of being a part of such a religious community is a set of expectations that comes with it that we all will always strive to be our very best selves, that we will aspire to be in the continuous practice of tikkun olam, the making whole of a broken world. We don't need to define what is holy for one another in order to work together towards what is good. We don't need to define what is holy for one another in order to work together towards what is good. The way that the father of universalism, Hosea Ballou, would say that is, we need not think alike in order to love alike. Loving alike is what calls us into community. It calls us as individuals to serve the larger good by serving others. It calls us as congregations to use our combined resources to make a substantial and beneficial difference in the way that the world unfolds around us. As combined congregations, Orange and Montclair, combined congregations, we have great potential for seeking and serving the endless possibilities of goodness and the possibilities for transformation and redemption of that separation and pain too easily found in our communities about us. Orange and the Valley District have long been the site of the transitional flow of immigrants entering this country. Talk about separation. Talk about strangers in a strange land. Here we are, my friends. We are there. We have the ability and the resources together. We have the call to take action on our religious impulses as partners, partner congregations, acting to make a difference, to make things better for those who are still learning to find their way in this strange new world, to make things better for those who've been here for a while, maybe even for generations, and who are still finding their way. We're not talking about creating drudgery for ourselves. We're talking about daring to imagine, to generate joy. There's already been one joint theater outing for our congregations at Luna Stage, which was very culturally educational for those of us who were there that night. How many of you were at Luna that night? I was there with you. What a wonderful experience that was. And there's the prospect of another such evening coming up on the 11th of April. And I hope we're able to do all kinds of things, activities like that together. In them, the wider community is served because that theater is supported. And the theater itself is an institution that pumps the lifeblood of imaginative thought back into our community. It is redeeming for all of us. There's been a lot of talk among folks in our congregations about joining together to work with one of the ESL programs that already functions right here in your facilities. And I hope that that comes to pass. It, too, would be redeeming for all of us. There are untold possibility for doing things together, things that we haven't even begun to think of. There are untold possibilities of service and of redemption that await our common venture. All of us come to our religious communities, I believe, to gain guidance and support in finding and making meaning in our lives. And what we discover when we get here are endless possibilities of service. That's a primary function of the religious community, to provide opportunities for service. And it is through those possibilities of service that we encounter possibilities for redemption. It is in our service to others and to the larger good that our own narratives are served. It is here where our own lives can be redeemed. It may well be through this sort of redemption that we can grow more comfortable being a stranger here ourselves. It may well be through this sort of redemption that maybe we can find that we can grow ourselves being a bit less strange than what we might have thought when we first walked through the door. These are the possibilities for which we come and for which we work together in hope. I promised earlier to finish the vignette from the bike ride that I started at the beginning. So when we last left, Bill and Chris and I were just leaving Thelma's Mercantile Exchange. When we got back outside, we looked up to the sky to see if there was any clearing in the weather. It looked just exactly as it had when we first stopped at Thelma's. Foggy, drizzling, windy, and cold. The sky and the horizon were indistinguishable through the rain, and it was still so foggy you couldn't see the fence posts along the side of the road just a few feet away. You could hear birds singing while roosting on the fence lines just a few feet away, but you couldn't see them. It may not have been any colder, but it wasn't any warmer either. Oh well. The thing was, though, that now I was warm. I didn't feel cold again that whole day. Talk about a breakfast that sticks to your ribs. I've always depended on the kindness of strangers, said Blanche DuBois in a streetcar named Desire. She's not alone in that regard, but I suppose that was Tennessee Williams' point, wasn't it? She wasn't alone. She depended on others. None of us are in this alone. We all depend on the kindness of strangers. And in turn, we have our moment in time of being the stranger or for when it is our time to be doing the giving. All my life's a circle, sang Harry Chapin. I imagine that means we should take every opportunity, as Thelma did, to care for strangers ourselves. It's all going around and coming around. Today you're at home, and tomorrow? Tomorrow you're the one who's on the road. So may we all travel well. Blessed be and amen.